Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
And, this whole past week has been dominated by the news of just one country.
Something occurred to me after we recorded last week that I did what might be considered to be quote-unquote oversharing, according to the broader public. I don't think we've gotten any negative comments. I don't think we've gotten any positive comments.
There's also no guarantee that your overshare made the edit, but we'll see how it goes.
Well, I mean, it's... I think people need to be a little bit more honest about their health, you know? It's good to have
someone. Oh, I see. No, I think that did make the edit.
Someone who's comfortable talking about stuff. And I hear people quite often saying TMI about things. And then I was thinking about that, and I was like, I don't think I've ever had a gay friend say that. And I think it's this thing in the community, and definitely among gay men, some lesbians as well are very much like this, where people are incredibly forward about their bodies and their health. You know, they'll just be like, oh man, I got the worst case of IBS. You wouldn't believe what happens to me when I eat dairy. Like, this is just normal conversation.
Yeah.
People are asking me, because I had to end up going on a very strong broad spectrum antibiotic, and people are asking me, you know, how are your health issues? And I was saying, the meds are worse than the health problems, because I'm farting like your weird uncle. And some people were like,
oh. I think I'm the weird uncle.
But some people instantly were like, oh, I know, oh, like, is it bad, so bad you're having trouble sleeping because you can't stop farting? And it's like, it's not quite that bad, but, you know. And it's really interesting how different people react to body talk. But, I mean, something that I feel strong, I mean, I come from a family of people with health problems. And in my family, if you don't speak honestly about your health, then you just die of colorectal cancer at the age of 21.
So open conversations are so important, especially, you know, I think with gay men, our health has been a part of our culture for a while, because the discourse has always centered around HIV, sexual health.
Yeah.
So our bodies and our identity have become intertwined.
But there's also like an uncommonly high rate of like asthma and IBS and fatigue disorders are incredibly common among LGBTQ folks. And no idea why. I mean, for the longest time, they were saying it's lifestyle choices. But a lot of these things, like IBS, starts kicking in when you're 16.
Mm.
So whatever you think is going on, it's probably something different. So I don't know. It's really peculiar. But
the body is political. The body politic, for sure, yeah. That was the name of a gay magazine for a while, wasn't it? Body Politic.
Body Politic, yeah. It's where Bruce LaBruce got his start.
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, when you, especially also when you think of trans folks and non-binary folks, that the identity of their physical self, it's all intertwined. So I think that because we culturally have all of these conversations amongst ourselves about our health, our well-being, our mental health, you know, on the whole, when we start having these conversations with like Joe Schmo on the street, maybe it is an overshare, or maybe it's opening a conversation. Well, I'm going to kick it off with the first gay story of the day,
which is one of like three that we could
find. Oh my God. Anything not related to the Americans was really hard to find.
Yeah.
We just don't want to inundate our listeners with more American news.
Yeah.
Thing happened. It's fine.
I just want my eggplant recipes, man.
Yeah, with no Trump. All right. So let's say you get married as a same-sex couple in the United Kingdom.
Okay.
And I don't know if you remember this, but there was I don't know if it was Canada or somewhere else, where they introduced same-sex marriage and then forgot to introduce same-sex divorce.
And there was like a 5 to 6 year delay. Yeah, that was, same-sex divorce came in like, I think 2007? It was years after same-sex marriage. And it was just, you know, the legislators kind of neglected that if you're going to do equality, you kind of, like, they could have just tacked it on with, like, one clause saying that, and the gays too, by the way. And everything would have applied equally.
Well, it seems like the UK is having that exact same issue. Because there are 5 grounds for divorce in the United Kingdom.
Okay.
And they are unreasonable behavior. So I feel like in case law, unreasonable has been set quite high.
So we're not talking about like a tomato and peanut butter sandwich.
Oh, that is unreasonable. That is very unreasonable. I would divorce you if you mixed it. Just peanut butter. Just the peanut butter is unreasonable. I despise this stuff.
You barely tolerate peanuts.
I don't. I can't. You know, every now and then I eat a single peanut to remind me why I don't like peanuts. I think I'm developing an allergy because I despise them so much. Desertion.
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 Like abandoning the battlefront?
Yes. Fleeing the war is grounds for a divorce.
So if you like just disappear out of the country for
Yeah, like completely vanish.
Okay.
Separation for 2+ years if both parties agree.
Okay.
And then separation for 5+ years with one party's agreement.
Mm.
And an affair.
Ooh, infidelity.
Unless you're gay.
Unless you're gay.
Because in the UK, the British government and British law does not recognize gay affairs. Legally, there is no such thing as a same-sex affair in the UK.
I see. I mean, you could throw out some stereotypes about that being business as usual. But, yeah, no, it's a little bit of an oversight there. So you have people trying to divorce their partners because they're like...
They've had affairs.
Yeah. And the judge is like...
Well, I'm sorry, guy, but...
I guess not, eh?
Yeah. So the Matrimonial Clauses Act, 1973,
throw in, like, and by the way, they make the tea in the microwave. That's unreasonable behavior.
That is unreasonable behavior. Yeah. Heating up tea in a microwave.
Yeah.
Heating up coffee, I understand. Coffee's a bit more robust. Mm. It can take the microwave.
If you reheat the coffee and then...
If there's milk in that tea, get out of town.
Yeah, no.
Get
no.
out of town. So the Matrimonial Act, 1973, defines the legal definition of adultery encompasses sexual intercourse between a man and a woman.
Woman, yes.
So, therefore, adultery in the eyes of this law does not include same-sex relationships.
Oh, this is one of those cases where doing things for LGBT rights also helps straight people. Because if you're a wife and it turns out your husband has slept with the entire rugby team.
Men's rugby team.
No grounds for divorce.
Nope. Not unless he did it whilst vanishing.
No.
Or he did it in a very unreasonable way. otherwise, no, it's true. It's not ground for divorce.
Oh, wow.
But you're absolutely right. All right, let's... in the UK,
yes.
There is pressure being applied for the government to legally recognize that you can have affairs with someone of the same sex.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, you could be a heterosexual couple and each of you could have all the dalliances you want with the same sex.
Yeah.
And it is not legally recognized as adultery in the United Kingdom.
Wow.
For our Canadian listeners, that's not the case.
It's not going to work, yeah. No. If you're a UK listener, it's a different story.
Yeah.
We do have some.
What a bit of a fail. Mm. They completely forgot to recognize the existence of same-sex affairs.
Yeah.
All right, we're jumping to our first song. We are ramping up our songs this week to help power through the post-election fatigue.
Uh-huh.
We're starting up with Wake Island. Now, these are quite cool. This is two guys from originally Beirut.
Okay.
They sort of switch between Montreal and New York City. They're in Montreal at the moment. And this song, Dia 3, really inspired this whole selection of music.
Okay.
Because I felt like Dia 3 was sort of very Europop influenced. I was getting like West End Girls, Pet Shop Boys vibes from this track. And I was like, oh, maybe we should do like modern takes on Europop as the theme. So then we actually have, following Wake Island's Dia 3, we actually have the Pet Shop Boys, but it's their new track, Monkey Business, that came out earlier this year. And maybe folks can kind of see the sound influences between the two. All right, this is Wake Island's Dia 3. We'll be back just after this.
You wanna change the world, but you don't wanna die. sitting here together inside our minds.
كلنا مهاجرين سوا من بحر لبحر طايرين بالهوى تركنا كل شي ورا ضياع.
Hello and welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
Are you lamenting the fact that we did not have a long enough break for you to refill your tea?
No, it's fine. You already drank it all anyway, you monster.
Was it unreasonable? Are you going to divorce me?
I'm going to marry you just so that I can divorce
you. Just so you can divorce me. You've made that threat a few times. I'm currently engaged to Jake, and I say or do things that are ridiculous, and you have told Jake in no uncertain terms that he should marry me just to divorce me on the grounds of the thing I've just done.
Yep. And I do it right in front of you while making eye contact. That is my way. Are we going to talk about Italy? Because there's two stories from Italy, in as much as there's any stories from anywhere.
I was going to start with Canada.
Okay, let's start with Canada.
Yes. Oh, Canada. Let's start there. Now, do you remember this guy? I have no other words than to call him deranged.
The more I learn about him, the more I think he may not actually be homophobic. I think he just loves violence and found out there was going to be a demonstration where violence was likely. And he was like, cool, I'll show up and bring some gear. Like, I think he just has, I think this in his mind is cheaper than therapy. He underestimates how expensive lawyers can be.
So Crazy Helmet Guy, as he has been colloquially called, or oh, I can't stand the man.
Okay.
Christopher van der Wild, he became a bit of a news sensation when footage emerged of the 2019 Pride Festival in Hamilton, where he ran up to people with a motorcycle helmet and smashed people across the face with it.
Yep.
Absolutely abhorrent behavior.
Yep.
And this was tied to a number of far-right protesters and evangelist protesters that interrupted the 2019 Pride Festival in Hamilton.
Yep.
Now, in September of 2020, Van der Reed pleaded guilty to one count of assault with a weapon following the 2019 Hamilton Pride.
Yes.
So he was arrested eventually by the Hamilton police, and he was charged, and he did plead guilty to it. I think he got 1 year suspended sentence that includes anger management counseling and a probation that's saying he can't go to Gage Park, which is in Hamilton.
God. I was making it up, but I was right, wasn't I?
And he can't contact his victims or other witnesses. He also can't possess any weapons, and he has to keep the peace.
Okay, yeah.
And that's where we come to today's story. There are two people in Hamilton who the chairperson and executive director of the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, ironically, that's who he's targeted, the Anti-Hate Network, based in Hamilton, that Van der Reed was actually threatening through private Facebook groups, Bernie Farber, the Anti-Hate Network chair, and Evan Balgord, the executive director of the Anti-Hate Network. And they were quite serious threats. We don't have the exact wording of them. We weren't able to get a hold of that. But the two individuals, aware of who Christopher Smash Your Face in Vanderbilt was, they immediately reported him to the Hamilton police.
Okay.
Who did nothing.
Oh my.
They did nothing. So
they didn't even show up an hour late.
They declined to pursue the matter. Oh. They're like, I don't think so. Not for me. They then reported them to the York Regional Police. And yesterday, according to the day of recording, the York Regional Police arrested Christopher van der Weyde. He was charged with uttering threats online and is scheduled to he was arrested on last Sunday, the week before Sunday, and he was he's going to be facing court as a result of this. So yeah, the new North York police said we have a duty to protect the identity of the victim, so they won't provide details or the details of the threat as it's evidence before the courts. So
I don't understand what is happening in York Region, and I mean that in a positive way because both you and I have engaged with crime stats data.
Yeah.
Or crime data stats, I guess you could say. I probably got that backwards.
For me, I don't know what's happening with Hamilton.
Well, no, it's every complaint you have ever heard about the police in Ontario is just not true about York Region Police. There's something.
Oh, I see what you're saying. They're like on it.
There's a weird Peel, which is right next door, is also pretty good And I don't know what they're doing because they're right next to Vaughan and they're right next to the Metro Toronto Police and they're surrounded by all these people who are having this weird history. I think York should just start exporting police chiefs to the rest of Ontario.
It's a mess. But I mean, for me, it begs the question about Hamilton. Hamilton recently brought on a openly gay businessman to the Hamilton Police Board, and it was a huge story at the time.
Yeah.
Well, it was a story in Hamilton. We looked at it when it came and went, and essentially the first thing this individual said, I am blanking on his name, but the first thing he said was, I can't comment on any of the things that's happened at the Pride Parade or anything else because I'm now on the board. So, I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
But there's now a gay guy on the board of the police. Yeah. And I don't think that solved anything. Because clearly, you know, the fact that the exact same accusation that was raised with Hamilton police, they were like, not interested. But York police are like, this is serious. It's a serious threat. Yeah, we're taking it seriously. What's going on, Hamilton?
This is step one. Like, you're not going to fix everything by putting one gay man on the board of directors.
No, no.
But that is step one. He ideally will be bringing up issues and helping to navigate things to fix other things elsewhere because boards are supposed to be kind of arm's length. They tell you what to do. They don't tell you how to do it.
Yeah, no, okay, I get it. But I mean, honestly, I mean, this is not the first time Hamilton Police has been seen to be sort of almost inept.
Or any police. Or
ineffective. Yeah. But it's about that they're now choosing not to pursue the exact same guy that was at the heart of the whole Pride 2019 issue. Like, I mean, come on.
If there was something like, this is a probationary issue and this is not the kind of thing that we deal with, he's got a social worker for that, like, say that. Don't just say, like, nah, not interested, sorry, guy.
Yeah, we're not going to pursue this.
Like the guy on the police board, like, him just saying, like, now that I'm here, there are certain things I'm not allowed to speak about in public. And it's like, it sucks, but it's...
It makes sense. I get it. I get it, yeah.
And if police, like, so many times I see... You see news reports of officers doing weird things, and you look up what they're doing and why they're doing it. You're like, oh, okay, no, that makes sense. They're doing that so that the protesters don't hurt themselves. They do that so that, you know, the cars don't swerve into oncoming traffic. They're doing this for the following reasons, and it makes sense. They're just not letting in anyone on the big secret about what they're doing and why they're doing it. It's, I don't know, there's a real communications issue going on here between the police and the public. I actually genuinely do think that, like, 3/4 of the problem between the police and the community is communication. Like the whole Bruce MacArthur thing, when it turned out the police were working on it, but their approach to the community was like, yeah, whatever, go away.
Well, I mean, they were on and off working on it. It was very touch and go in some places. There were some that they investigated with more enthusiasm than others.
Some of it was also cold cases, and those are hard to do. But then how did they become cold cases in the first place? It's just complicated. But yeah, the community relations portion of letting people know what you're doing and why, I think a lot more people would be like, oh, okay, yeah. So that's not a you problem. That's an Ontario legislator failing to update the legal system issue, which is a real thing. A lot of the problems really are just that, you know, Queen's Park hasn't updated certain things.
Maybe it was the Crown prosecutors in North York are just more Johnny on the spot than the Crown prosecutors in Hamilton.
Let us know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just let us know.
We'll keep an eye out on it. Now, I do have another Canadian story. We have been keeping our eyes on... Wow, that was a tongue twister.
It really wasn't.
I know, maybe it's just me. The Canadian Museum of Human Rights.
Yes.
Now, the Canadian Museum of Human Rights has been in and out of the news for the last year for a number of reasons.
For something they did 2 years ago.
A few years ago. It was more than 2 years ago. The news hit the press 2 years ago. But at one point, there were an instruction given to some tour guides to either omit or skip LGBT content for certain religious groups. I think it was the Hutu rights in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea being that these sort of caretakers of LGBT experiences of hate and discrimination and effective, like, being wiped out, They've just decided that LGBT content is optional. And the backlash and the fallout was monumental. They've also been accused of racism in multiple occasions whilst all this was unfolding. And there was also allegations by a number of women of sexual harassment by one of the senior staff who I don't believe is still there anymore. But it was
Talk about this? This feels new to me.
We didn't do a deep dive into that one.
Okay.
It is a part of a very troublesome year
for
the Canadian Museum of Human Rights.
Apparently. Yeah.
And they brought in new leadership. We talked last week about how we've heard that they've done consultations with their entire staff. Mm-hmm. Even Jimmy Joe, the cleaner, got a bit of a chat, bit of FaceTime with the executive director. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the cleaner's called Jimmy Joe, but I do know that everybody got to have a chat about what they see as the issues.
It's actually James Joe.
James Joe? Yeah. I'm sorry. Anyway, so the Canadian Museum of Human Rights has released an 8-page document called Creating an Equitable Museum.
Okay.
And it contains 40 different strategies that they're going to employ to create a more equitable museum. Okay. It is a substantial list.
I'm pretty sure the Royal Ontario Museum has already done this. Like, the place where they keep the dinosaur bones did this in, like, the 80s, which is baffling. Do you think maybe there's just this sort of, like, resting on your laurels effect where they're like, we're the Museum of Human Rights, baby. We don't gotta do that. Like, it didn't occur to them that they also have to do this equity stuff?
I think a part of it is it's not just this museum, it's lots of organizations only now starting to grapple with maybe we need to be a bit more proactive and less reactive.
I think, okay, so if you're something like the Museum of Human Rights, you have no excuse to not be proactive. Yeah. The other thing that I kind of wonder about is how many of the people sort of embroiled in this scandal were just like, dude, I am just a graphic designer and they were paying... And they were hiring when I was looking for work. Like, how many people there are just, like, there for the job, and they're kind of indifferent about the actual cause?
Yeah, I'm sure...
Which doesn't excuse anything, obviously.
I think everyone... I'm going to state that I believe that everyone working for the Canadian Museum of Human Rights fundamentally believes in the mission of the Canadian Museum of Human Rights.
Okay.
You know, I think that that's a pretty fair statement. Having gone there, met with some of the staff.
Okay.
I am confident that's the case.
You went there after all this happened, though, right?
No, just before the news broke. It was just before.
But the news broke, but a year after it stopped,
yes.
I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, this document is designed for hearing and considering diverse perspectives, cultivating a deep understanding of human rights principles, which as a human rights museum, they really should do.
Uh-huh.
Respecting and valuing each other in the workplace, ensuring a meaningful relationship with the community, and demonstrating respect for the lived experiences of others.
Now, Luke, some of those things are really just labor rights, and they're not the labor rights museum.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely.
That was me being sarcastic.
There are some here that I'm going to point out that I think is kind of good ideas.
Okay.
Like, genuinely, I think these are good ideas. Some of them should probably have been done before.
Okay.
But that's, you know, fine. So, strengthen board operations and management reporting practices to improve oversight and accountability. Improving oversight. Good idea. I like it.
Okay, yes.
Create a program to recruit and develop staff from underrepresented groups at all levels of the organization. That's a good idea. I like that. Evaluate retention rates and find out what the problems are. These are very good ideas as well. Assess job qualifications for all the positions to distinguish between required and preferred qualifications. So this is a good one. This is, we see this a lot in other areas where they say automatically, oh, this job absolutely needs a degree. And now they're thinking critically, like, okay, do you really need a degree for this job?
Yeah.
Or does equivalent experience do the trick?
Yeah.
Because not everyone has access to just get a degree,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the off chance of applying for this.
And it... Having an academic approach to an issue doesn't necessarily prepare you for the kind of situation you're going to be in. Like, this is the classic example with computer sciences. Do you hire somebody out of college or somebody out of university? If you need someone to program a very complicated thing and quickly, you get someone from college. They're going to do it twice as fast
if you want somebody to design the system, you get somebody from university. And some of this stuff, it's like, do you want them to design a pedagogical structure on teaching the public about blah, 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 blah?
Mm-hmm.
Degree is probably fine. You know, if you want somebody who's familiar with the history of the issue, then absolutely, like, 20 years of grassroots experience? Yeah, hire that person, not the somebody with like a 3-year degree.
Yeah, and there's more here. There's like, move immediately to anonymize resumes and applications. The number of studies that have found that white people who are doing hiring, who unconsciously or subconsciously are biased towards white-sounding names is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's quite common for folks with ethnic names to use a white name on their resume, specifically because of this.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say white. I would say Anglo.
Anglo-sounding
names. If your name is like Sasha Divjarnovic, you're probably going to fall into the same pitfall.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, oh. But
John Smith.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you might get further.
Yeah.
They're going to prioritize the recruitment of BIPOC and LGBT executives and managers. They're going to screen the mandatory requirements and assess criteria for implicit bias. Is there bias in what they're looking for? You know, I think all of these things are...
That's the only one so far that I'm kind of like, ooh, because that stuff is harder to screen for than a lot of people seem to think. And a lot of the tests that they've developed to screen for implicit bias, it turns out they don't do what people think they do. That one, I would say, is a different issue. But, I mean, it's really easy to work around that with something called the... The contact, just contact, I think it's called.
I don't know.
Anyway, just being in the presence of diversity, like hanging out with people and like, you know, if you're uncomfortable around people from a certain ethnic background because you've just never met somebody from that ethnic background and you've heard weird things in the news and then you sit next to them for lunch every day, just mere exposure. That's what's called the mere exposure effect. Just by hanging out with them, having lunch and talking about nothing of importance.
So there is, for example, we got here, engage the board in mandatory ongoing anti-racist and anti-oppression education through self-learning and scheduled training. Like they're going to make addressing anti-racism as part of their ongoing role, which for an organization that's been accused of systemic racism with multiple cited examples, I think that's a pretty good step.
I think this is a bad sign, though, because for an organization like this, normally the board would be helping to design this kind of education and training. Like, they would be... If they need that training, that's...
Well, there was a lack of oversight, and it's... I think the point of this document is that it is training from the top down. Like, you know, they're leading from the front as boards. There's another one here. Ensure that key staff, including at the executive level, have explicit responsibilities related to addressing diversity and inclusion. So this is just, it seems to me, I mean, this is a long list. I'm not going to go through all 40 of them. But this is a substantial list that seems to clearly outline a lot of reasonable steps to addressing the issue at hand. Do I think that they have now earned forgiveness? No. I think what they've done is they've identified a path forward. And now we just have to see if they walk that path.
And another... A lot of the usual arguments kind of slip by them. So, you know, if you're targeting certain groups, is that tokenism or is that inclusion? And I think if you are the... Museum of History, the Museum of Human Rights, saying we have a strong preference for Ugandan refugees when talking about this one particular display, it'd be like, well, yes,
the genocide in Uganda, you need the lived experience, absolutely.
You are not tokenizing anyone when you're doing that by saying we demand that at least 5% or whatever.
Well, some of the item in here, because I read through all of it, some of them are things like making sure that staff have the space and the ability to share their lived experiences with other staff and senior execs on the board.
Yeah.
So that there is more of this exchange of identity, because the kinds of folks who are signing up to work at the Museum of Human Rights are those for whom this is almost personal.
Yeah, they have a history of not having many of them.
Well, we're going to jump to our next song before we move into a different topic. This is Röyksopp and Robbins with Do It Again, followed by Bright Light, Bright Light with It's Okay, It's All Right, It's Okay. And I chose Bright Light, Bright Lights, It's All Right, It's Okay.
Yeah.
Because after the past week of the election tension, I feel like we all just need to listen to a song that just says, it's all right, it's okay. We'll be back just after this.
Your the world that they can't seem to cut. Maybe they'll never learn, so just let them be whatever. It's alright, it's okay. Break the silence, break the chain. Live your life and don't let anybody change what's inside you. It's okay, it's alright. Break the chain, break the silence. Live your life and don't let anybody change what's inside you. One day they're gonna see our names in some great story. One day they're gonna sing our praise for all our glory. 'Cause out here we can be anything. Can you feel it? Out here we can be anything. Can you feel it? It's alright, it's okay. Break the silence, break the chain. Live your life and don't let anybody change what's inside you. It's okay, it's alright. Break the chain, break the silence. Live your life and don't let anybody change what's inside you. It's alright.
Hello and welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
Now, let me tell you about Mardi Gras.
Which one?
The Sydney Mardi Gras.
Of course, okay.
So there's a great documentary film about Mardi Gras on Netflix. I'm blanking on the name of it. I will look it up and find it.
Because you've also got Mardi Gras New Orleans. You've got Mardi Gras... not Puerto Vallarta. What is the one in South America? Is it Argentina has a huge Mardi Gras? And then you've got the really boring Vatican City Mardi Gras, which is... really boring.
Well, when you compare it to, like, you know, Sydney's Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, that's, I think that that's
absolutely... Although I think New Orleans probably has a Mardi Gras that's slightly more wild, but it's, in terms of a big party, then yeah, probably Sydney. I don't know. It's apples and oranges. Apples and oranges.
I think it's actually called Mardi Gras, the documentary that's on Netflix.
I mean, that's still misleading.
Yeah,
because there's
it refers to the birth and the origin of the Australian Mardi Gras.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so the reason why I bring it up is because we are hunkering down for the cold, long, hard winter of despair, which is coming up ahead of us. Nice, cheerful, optimistic view. But, you know, as the Northern Hemisphere buckles down for Snowmageddon, the Southern Hemisphere... Mm-hmm. is looking at some bright old sunshine as we move forward into our winter, but their summer.
Yes.
So Sydney's Mardi Gras is planning their Pride parade.
Yes.
Because they do it when it's sunny.
Yes.
Not in the middle of their winter.
Well, so they don't have to do it in June because Stonewall happened in New York.
Yes.
And they have their own event that they're commemorating, yes. I'm sure.
Weirdly, the whole world doesn't just celebrate the American Stonewall. I know.
But people want it to. It's so frustrating.
Like, you know what? The American Stonewall event had an impact that was important.
A very important one, yeah.
But it was, you know, Stonewall on its own would not have cemented human LGBT rights in Canada. Not without the murder of Alain Rousseau, not without the bathhouse raids, Operation not without Soap. Operation Soap, yeah. Not without the Lavender Scare, not without any of that. It's the Canadian instances of fighting for rights that triggered the rights movement in Canada.
Yep.
Helped and nudged along by Stonewall. And likewise, in Australia, they don't really have a huge deference for this American event because they have their own. And what they've decided in their plan for 2021 in March, which is when they're scheduled for the Mardi Gras, is normally the Mardi Gras is a big old parade. They're the ones that have the giant floats and the outrageous costumes and big crowd, and it's so much fun. But this year they're cutting back the number of floats.
Okay.
There's going to be less corporate floats, more community organizers, community folks marching. All the matches are going to be spaced out, and they're going to be at a cricket stadium.
Oh, all right. I guess something has to happen at a cricket stadium.
Yeah, other than cricket. And I mean, in Australia, cricket's huge.
Yeah.
Like the bowls, the cricket's massive in Australia. Cricket
doesn't really happen, even when it's happening.
Yeah, not unless you've got like one of those time-lapse cameras and you can take 3 days and
the advantage, though, of having your Pride festival being Mardi Gras themed is it naturally has this wonderful thing where you can make it into a masquerade theme every year. Mm-hmm. You could just have a masquerade Mardi Gras, and then social distancing goes from like 6 feet down to like 4 because everyone's wearing a mask now.
Well, that's why they're in the cricket stadium.
Okay.
It's because all of the spectators are going to be in the stands.
Okay.
Sort of evenly spaced out in the stands. So instead of crowded throngs of people in thongs in the street, sort of breathing all over each other as would normally happen at a Pride parade, they're going to be evenly spaced out on stands watching an evenly spaced out, mainly fancy dressed marchers with some floats going by. It's not the Mardi Gras of old.
No.
But it's actually, I think, this group have had the whole of our summer to see what all of the Northern Hemisphere Pride organizations did and think about how are they going to innovate. And I think this is actually the first time we're seeing a COVID-19-proof Pride parade.
I was actually just thinking, if they're going to do their parade like this, Amazon Australia is going to run out of binoculars. But then I was thinking, no, this is gay Mardi Gras. They're going to run out of little tiny elegant opera glasses
on the
stick. It's just
opera
going to
glasses
be
on the stick. Yeah, I like it.
If they branded tiny opera glasses on a stick, they could sell that out and just raise funds.
Absolutely. Yeah, within minutes. Yeah, I think so too. All right. Well, that was the cool story that they've COVID-proofed their plans for Mardi Gras.
I would call it COVID-resistant.
Yes.
Far more so than anyone else, for
sure. Yeah, not COVID-proof, but yes, you're right. They're more COVID-ready than the others. The last story we have, we're actually going to give a skip on the US stories until next week. The last story we have is an update on the Italian one. So we talked at length a couple of weeks ago about an effort in Italy to introduce anti-discrimination legislation.
Yes.
And how the Brothers of Italy, the bishops, were against it, amongst others. And it sounds like it went well.
Well, I have to translate in my head because I'm looking at a French periodical and they're using the original Italian names for everything. So the Partito Democratico Social Democrate, I'm guessing the Social Democrat Party of Italy, they put this bill on the floor, and 256 in favor, 193 against, and only one abstention, which is actually, I am jealous of that turnout. I wish Canada had that kind of turnout. So yeah, now it passed.
Well, it has to go past the Italian upper house.
Okay.
So the higher chamber of legislation.
256 to 193. That's a good showing.
It's a nice showing.
Yeah,
absolutely. There was a lot of resistance from far right groups and from Catholic groups in Italy, and being that's where you know Catholicism lives, it's a pretty substantial group of folks to deal with.
Yeah,
but I mean, this is big news for Italy because Italy has never had anti-hate protections for LGBT folks.
Yeah,
which is mind-boggling.
Well, I mean, and Vatican City's there.
Which makes it less mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Actually, the last story is the Vatican City that has issued a clarification.
Yes.
That the Pope is not, in fact, wholeheartedly in favor of same-sex civil unions.
Apparently,
the Pope was misquoted and had gone on to express his disagreement around same-sex marriage. So a lot of people were calling his comments a pathway to marriage.
Mm.
And they're like, no.
This is as old as Europe.
As the hills?
The relationship between the Pope and the papacy, that the Pope is like, yeah, no, totally, this is a great idea. And then like, no, he didn't mean that. He did, but the bureaucracy, the sort of like deep state, the deep Vatican state behind the Pope.
The deep state of the Vatican? You know, it's funny because like, It's probably a thing.
Yeah, it's probably a thing. We can just assume, we can picture that it is a real thing. The degree to which it's true, just like the normal deep state thing, that's up for debate, but it's almost definitely true. And they're probably like, no, this is too inconvenient. No. Even though the Pope himself is probably like, yeah, cool, whatever, I don't care.
Well, apparently the Vatican Secretariat has issued a clarification and indicated that there were portions of the interview where this story emerged from that weren't broadcast, where the Pope had clarified his position.
Oh.
So it seems like a part of it was limited quoting of the Pope that gave a wrong impression.
Okay.
We were quite skeptical when the story first came out. The Pope has been wishy-washy, and the Vatican, the institution of the Catholic Church, has been quite consistent in their anti-gay position in terms of gay marriage.
Yeah.
But it seems like what the Secretariat and the Pope have landed on in agreement is that when it comes to things like access to health, so if your significant other is dying in a hospital, you should be able to see them.
Yeah.
So there is certainly an agreement that gay people should be treated humanely under the law.
Yeah.
And equally under the law to a point. Where that point sits may differ between the Pope, the Vatican, and the rest of the world. But,
and what country you're talking about.
Yes, yeah. But there does seem to be some agreement around that certain fact.
Well, baby steps. It is the papacy. They are 2,000, actually, it's probably like...
Bajillion years old.
1,000 years old, probably.
Well,
but, yeah.
It's older than 1,000 years old. Anyway, we have run out of time. This is Elton John's Looking Up, another little upbeat song to help folks get by. And we will be back next week.
I didn't have time to tell the porn story.
No, that'll have to wait.
It's not even a great story.
Well, it's a good one for the US stories next week.
All right, okay. Yeah.
Okay, I've been Lake Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thanks for listening.
Hand up, bring it up, the water's